Stardate 96800.53. You are listening to Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name's Mike Moody. With me is...
Grant Davis.
And...
Mariah Gossett.
And...
Clyde Haynes.
All right. Finger guns, Clyde Haynes. Today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 9 of Star Trek Discovery, Project Daedalus. And... two in a row, guys. Two pretty awesome episodes in a row.
We're up to about like nine awesome episodes in a row.
I think these past two have been the best of the season so far. The season's getting really good. But there's only two episodes left?
I know.
I thought we had
four.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
I think they cut... I'm looking on the wiki page and it says there's only two left. And the next one is called Red Angel. So we're getting to the end.
Dun.
All right, look, I need, we got to get back to the 22 episodes.
No. At least 13.
Come on, if they were good, if they were really solid, like if they could put off 22 really great episodes, you're telling me you would go, nah, I don't want it?
I would. No, give me a break.
Yeah.
There's so much other TV out there.
Yeah, there's much TV.
There's a lot of TV, but is there a lot of
the production
good TV?
Value is so much higher now, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like a multi-cam Frasier situation.
I'm just saying, I would take it. Like, if they had 22 really good episodes, I'd
say. Clyde, I record like 15 podcasts a week. I need a break.
And one of your podcasts is all about other TV shows.
Right.
I know.
I'm not talking about as a podcaster. I'm just talking about as someone who enjoys television. This is a great show. I'd like more.
I podcast about television. I don't enjoy television anymore. It's all fucking work. We are Star Trek Discovery Pod. You can find us online at StarTrekPod.com. Find us on Twitter at Star Trek Pod. And if you really want to help us out,
Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go there and make a per episode donation. So give us a buck or two per episode. If you give us $2, you can have access to our exclusive Slack channel. That's where we go and discuss stuff all behind the scenes with a bunch of like-minded fans. And it's a lot of fun. $2 an episode, $8 a month. And you guys might as well make that donation right away because we're about to go into the off season, and you know, you just kind of jump on the ship at last minute, and then we can talk all through the off season and about our anticipation for all these little spin-off shows going on.
Right. We got a new casting announcement for the Picard show today. Mm-hmm. They're casting that up, so I'm looking forward to that. Speaking of Patreon stuff, you can also get bonus content. We do some bonus content sometimes in terms of bonus episodes. And I had an idea for a bonus episode. Maybe I can get some of you guys to do this with me. We'll see. I put a poll up on our Patreon asking the patrons if we somehow got our shit together to record a commentary track for a Star Trek movie.
Like a riff track?
Yeah. Which one of these four would you like us to do?
And I don't say Khan. Don't say Wrath of Khan. That's like the only one you know.
No. I only listed four, and I listed four that I want to watch because I haven't seen these in a while.
And no whales.
Okay. So the options were Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, mm-hmm. very apropos to this season.
Okay.
Maybe. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, in which we meet Spock's brother, Sybok.
Aren't all the odd ones supposed to be the bad ones?
That's why I'm picking them.
Okay, cool.
But we also have Star Trek First Contact, which is my favorite and is one of the best ones.
Is that the Eric Bana one?
No, this is the Picard one where he fights the Borg.
Mm.
It's really good. And Star Trek Beyond, the latest J.J. Abrams movie.
Oh, God, no.
I like that one.
I think I'm voting for...
you don't vote, sir. The people vote. And the...
I had a vote, though.
The poll... No, that's why I didn't let you know about this. And the poll closed today.
So, oh, what do we got?
Are we drum rolling?
Go ahead. Drum roll. The winner is Star Trek III, The Search for Spock.
Nice.
Okay.
Christopher Lloyd as a evil, malicious Klingon whose only goal in life is to kill Captain Kirk.
This sounds good.
It is pretty mm-hmm. good. Yeah. Do you remember this one?
I vaguely remember. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
The only bad thing about this one is that they blew all their money in the first two movies, so the effects work is a little wonky, right?
So much fun, though.
Yeah, but it's really fun.
That's going to make it fun to talk about.
Yeah.
So how does this work? Would we all just watch with the microphone in front of our face, and then we do one watch, and we go, oh, that was terrible. Let's do this again and, like, actually write down our jokes and time it.
No.
It'll be like
go ahead.
Oh, like a Benson interruption. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Except we aren't as funny, so it'll be fine.
Grant's pretty funny. Glad's pretty funny.
So to get the most out of this, are we asking our podcast listeners to turn on the movie and watch it with us in the background listening to us? So we're almost watching it at the same time?
Well, the way, I mean, yeah.
Okay.
We would like do a snap or play a sound when they can turn on the movie and they put their earbuds in. And they watch the movie. It's a commentary track.
Okay.
So cool. I'm not sure when we'll be doing this. I mean, this week is nuts. I'm going back to work next week, but we'll figure it out. Maybe for the off season. So look forward to that. And if you're a listener and you want to get in on these decisions on what we're going to do for our bonus material, visit us at
Star Trek Pod.
Almost.
Patreon.com/StarTrekPod.
Yes.
Yes. Go there. Give us all your money. Thank you.
All your qubits. Okay. So Project Daedalus. Before we jump into Project Daedalus, guys, Grant, you weren't here last week. And we didn't get your opinion on last week's episode.
This is true.
Yeah.
I actually just watched that episode today, before this other episode.
Slacker.
If Memory Serves, which was, for all intents and purposes, a sequel to The Cage and The Menagerie, the original series episodes. So you just watched it. What did you think?
I thought it was great for the most part.
Okay.
I loved that intro, the previously on, that was like this 70s, and it was like, oh, we're directly tying this into some old show that I hadn't seen. It all looked really hokey and terrible.
Yeah.
And I love them touching the paper mache blue leaves or whatever. Yeah. And then we see these like really nice rendered versions of them. And it's just like, look, guys, just buy into the fact that we've recast everyone, but they're the same people.
Right.
Okay, sure. I thought that it really did a great job of exploring a lot of this, a lot of these parallel, like, dual identities that people are suffering, especially with like Culber and Ash. I started liking Ash a lot more in that last episode because I think that him going to bat on behalf of Burnham was a little bit more endearing.
Yes.
Him and how he confronted and handled Culber was interesting to me. I think that like they are starting to find some common ground, and I think it's kind of necessary for Culber to have someone else who can understand, like, fighting this inner demon that you don't fully recognize within yourself.
Can I say something real quick?
Sure.
We speculated that Culber and Ash might spin off together to the Section 31 show.
Because
I like the dynamic, and they're both, you know, people who are dealing with identity crisis at this point.
I'm definitely expecting them to be friends, though you kind of lost me as you were talking. I stopped listening as I started to like Ash. I'm not quite sure what you said after that, so continue.
Okay.
Yeah, we're still not super sold on Ash.
I mean, this was
season.
A whole episode
without
no
him.
Ash.
That's true.
They had him locked in his room.
So were you confused at all since it was a sequel to an original series episode you'd never seen?
Not too much. Yeah. I think that what I could glean from the old show was that it wasn't necessarily as complex, or it was a little bit sillier, and they just kind of wanted to take an overall idea that there's this other planet that had an emotional connection for Pike, and I'm like, okay, I'm good with that, and I won't try and explore too much of whatever's going on with this hologram girlfriend thing and these people that are reading minds and like getting off on people's pain or whatever thing.
Welcome to Grant shits on the original series.
But I haven't seen it, so I don't know. The only thing I really didn't like was the big reveal of what Burnham's conflict with Spock was. It seemed a little bit underwhelming.
Okay.
And you've redeemed yourself. Great job.
Yeah.
We all said the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Man, I'm just constantly seeking Clyde's validation, and I appreciate that.
And he knows it, too.
Yeah, he does. He dangles it.
Yeah.
it was just pretty weak, this idea that like they just had a mild squabble. But at the same time, I think there could be some element of truth to like how delicate a relationship they already have as non-blood relative half-siblings that are both kind of struggling with their own personal shit. Like, they're both really damaged kids, and then for her to burn him, right? Mm-mm. Like that?
Nope.
Burn him like that? was, I, you know, big wounds can come from piddly arguments. And, you know, we even see that a little bit in this week's episode. There's some squabbles that just seemed like, this seems so relatively insignificant. And yet, those type of dumb arguments can just, like, have this underlying, like, actual pain to them that is like, okay.
Yep. And it depends on who it comes from. If it's somebody you really hold dear,
yeah,
it can be a lot weightier.
What I thought was more interesting is that it came across more like Burnham is holding on to a lot of guilt and and feeling that she did something like just atrocious, and he's just kind of more emotionally detached. Like, no, I mean, I think you just kind of hurt me at a young age that just told me to kind of isolate my feelings and isolate myself from having relationships with a lot of people. And to him, it's probably not as much of a thing. He just embraced his more Vulcan side. And she's like, oh, I hurt him so bad that he will just never recover from this. And he's like, who are you? Whatever.
You know, not a big deal. That's an interesting perspective, Grant, because I think we see that in real life all the time, right? Like, two people date and somebody gets hurt and they go, well, I'm never going to let anybody get close to me again.
Yeah, he has his Vulcan armor up.
Yeah, and that never works out for the person who decides to do that. And then the other person goes, oh, I feel so guilty because I hurt them. Everybody just needs to, like, move on.
Therapy.
Yeah, get some counseling.
It's almost as if you can't succeed if you're a purely logical being or a purely emotional being. It's almost as if we should combine the two.
Embrace our humanity!
Yeah, interesting.
And this week, do you guys not feel like we got a little bit of a therapist on the ship now in the form of Spock?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he was dropping some, like, analysis of other people that they desperately needed.
Yeah, he was kind of helping out Burnham. He helped out Stamets. Mm-hmm. Yeah, with his whole Colbert situation. He's like, oh, by the way, I saw this going on. And here's
just
going
to casually reference what someone else should have helped you with a long time ago, but no one else seems to be doing it.
Well,
no one is paying attention to Stamets, actually.
Before we get too deep, I just want to know if you guys enjoyed the episode, so we're going to do some hot takes.
Hot takes!
Clyde, how about you?
I enjoyed this episode. I thought it started out a little bit slow and then kind of started to pick up and took me to some places that I wasn't expecting. I was expecting Arium to be a little bit more evil. And we got this kind of duality that was both
what do you know,
caring and yet mischievous at the same time, and I kind of enjoyed that. I thought it was crafted together well, but I also know that this was directed by Jonathan Frakes, and I typically like his episodes, so I was kind of expecting, and I probably was looking at it like, oh, this is going to be a good one, and walked into it that way.
Good old Riker.
Mariah, what did you think of this Frakes directed episode?
I also really liked this episode a lot. I agree. I thought in the beginning I could like feel the writing a little bit more and some of the dialogue, because I think like Burnham and Spock are still trying to find, I think, their on-screen chemistry together a bit, because they, you know, are supposed to have this long relationship, but in reality we've seen them together on screen for like two episodes. So, but yeah, once we hit the action sequences and like the emotional arc, I was in.
What did you think of Admiral Cornwell or
Cornwall?
Cornwallis.
I feel like she just doesn't bring anything, and I felt like she helped drag the tempo down a little bit.
I think she's kind of inept in a way, but I think that she was a necessary element of this story pushing to where it needed to go.
Yeah, she's a plot device.
Yeah, I think she was needed to give Pike that confidence to like go through with this like mission that he maybe wasn't 100% sure if he was making all the correct decisions, and knowing that he was like, oh, I am the Federation, I am the representation, and
I mean,
and
he's
Mike,
the
that is correct.
Best of what we have of the Federation.
Wasn't that so sweet? A bit too corny for you guys?
No, it was really on point for me. Also because we're dealing with a version of Star Trek that comes before the original series. Mm-hmm. And so we don't see the fully fleshed out Federation that we see in the original series. Mm-hmm. And we are seeing a Pike that embodies all of those values from his core to his fucking fingernails. So it makes sense that someone, an admiral in a high position, would be like, you know what? You embody the core of our values, and we need you here because you're going to be a leader to shape things to come. And that's telling me, as a fan who knows how Starfleet, you know, is shaped going forward, that there's a basis for that. You know, it makes sense that it would come from somebody like Pike.
This ain't your bullshit Captain Archer.
Oh God,
is that a good? Is that, who Scott Bakula is?
Yeah. Why would you even bring that up?
It's been a long road.
We do not talk about Enterprise on this show.
Getting from there to here. I got a mic in front of me. I'm going to sing. All right, Grant, what did you think about this episode?
I mean, it was great. Yeah, you know.
We talked about it a little bit just now.
You know, I fanboy out on every episode now. My ability to be critical is gone. I just love all these episodes. I thought that this one, you can tell that everything is picking up as they are moving to the finish line of this season. I didn't know that we were actually only a couple episodes away from the end, but I was already just like really impressed. Like, oh, okay, they're really starting to pull these pieces together. Like, I thought Arium was just one of those devices that they were going to have that arc kind of run a couple episodes. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it kind of wrapped up pretty quickly in this episode, I'm like, oh, okay,
yeah,
sweet. An amazing battle between Arium and Burnham. And yeah, I dug it.
We have a consensus. I love this episode. Mm-hmm. It was really good. And I liked all the themes of burden and responsibility that we were talking about earlier before, and how that fuels everybody in this episode. And it is what everybody's grappling with. I was surprised that my new favorite character, Arium, is now dead.
Your new favorite character?
Yeah.
Why?
Why not? Okay, I thought it was such
We got to know her so well, yeah, and then they were like, crush it.
It was such a great narrative device. I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense that she wouldn't have enough memory storage, so she has to consistently dump out her memories. But it was a great narrative device because we got to see her RoboCop vision while she's dumping out her memories. So we get to see kind of her origin. We get to see the friendships that she's made on the crew. So then when she's put in peril at the end and then she dies at the end, it does have an impact.
It really did.
Yeah.
They did a great job there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my concern, or my I'll nitpick at this a little bit.
Pick them nits.
As you know, I've been clamoring and asking for more development of the secondary characters, particularly those on the bridge, right? And we've just like, so for them to give us Commander Arium, right? So that's why she was in the seat last week, is because she holds the rank of commander, right? We get to learn a little bit about her. We get her kind of some background. And the minute that we do that, they kill her. Like, I've been looking for this, and now she's dead.
It still worked for me, though. And
yeah,
it reminded me of a pretty early episode of Battlestar Galactica, where there's this like the, not the bridge, but what did they call the, it was like the main process room in the Battlestar, the war room or whatever. You have all these people running around and you never really got to know them. But then there was one episode where they're all doing video diaries. Yes. And you get all the C and D characters and you learn who they are through that. And I thought that's what we got here through like Arium's RoboVision. You know, we got some really nice human moments with Kayla, and Kayla's my favorite.
Of course. But it was also nice because I think we now know what Arium was or is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think we all kind of assumed that she was an alien technology.
Well, they didn't know.
The lady who had a shitty honeymoon.
Okay. So she had a shitty honeymoon, right? Her husband died. They had a crash or some illusion that, you know, that, oh, we crashed.
They turned her into RoboCop, just like you said.
Well, she's augmented, right?
She's augmented.
Because the whole, I thought it was interesting that almost all of the sort of secondary character development were everyone who has something that's augmented.
Yeah.
Because we finally get a little bit more time with Commander
Non,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who will stop calling headgear.
Yeah.
And refer to, now that we know
her. Your headgear got ripped the fuck off.
Non.
Still can't call her headgear.
Three cheers for cybernetics. I like that.
Yeah. Hey,
that
was cool. Can I just say, I was really impressed that the away team was three strong women.
Yes.
Yes.
I thought that was a very nice touch. I was like, yeah. I mean,
dude, that bridge is loaded with women, right?
It is.
We're seeing some really good representation on that bridge.
And Rando Bryce, who, you know, presses the communication button.
Right. I can't do it. Sorry.
I'm not responding.
I'm not Uhura, dude. I can't do it.
I need a broader skill set, buddy.
Yeah. Why are you sending in a man to do a woman's job? That's all I'm saying.
Though that's interesting.
Okay.
That the person who connects the phone, the operator,
yeah,
is a man. I mean, that's for a thing. You say right. Don't send a man to do a woman's job. I don't think it's a woman's job. I think he's the operator.
Right.
That's who he is.
Until it's an all female bridge crew with only one dude. It's not gonna be enough.
not gonna work.
Yeah.
Okay. So going back to Arium, I bought it. Okay, I buy that she is an augmented human with cybernetics. You know, they rebuilt her after the crash. But in the future, like when you go get your driver's license, you know, you have to check that thing where I'll donate my pupils to science or whatever. In the future, is there another box that says
rebuild me if I die?
Turn me into fucking RoboCop if I die, yes or no?
There's a do not resuscitate order, and now there's a do not augment order.
Right.
Like you've got to think
like,
about
do
that.
You opt in for that? What's happening?
I mean,
it has amazing insurance. Yeah.
She's had Cigna, bro.
The problem with that is there'd be too many people who would go out and jump off things.
Right.
Just so
they could be RoboCop.
I would like a cybernetic pair of arms. Cut them off.
We can make this happen. In a few decades. Yeah. You shouldn't have cut those off yet. We're not there.
You need to hit your deductible at the end of the year. Okay, so I really... the Arium story really worked for me emotionally. And, you know, that's a big thing for me. I want to feel something. This episode really made me feel something. What'd you guys think of Spock? I know we talked about it earlier, but I really like that he's throwing so much shade over at...
I like sassy Spock.
Over at Burnham. He's very sassy, but also very piercing and cutting in a very Vulcan way. It wasn't exactly like the Spock we know from the original series. And it was a little bit more of a punk rock pissed off Spock.
It's nothing like the Spock we know. Yeah. But
I'm cool with that.
I've come to terms with the fact that the way I have to look at this is stop thinking about this as Leonard Nimoy. Mm-hmm. Right? And just think about this is who this character is. We're going to call him Spock, but we can call him anything we want. This is just looking at him as his own character. And it was cool. I like cool, swag Spock.
This is like a Spock who brunches, who's going to tell you like it is.
Yeah. Wait, so is in the original series, is he not as dickish?
I mean, he's like very direct, but it's always like a weird form of compassion is sort of on the end of it.
There's more of a, he does it with more of a wink and a smile, maybe. Mm-hmm. He's angrier here.
So he's a little younger, a little bit quicker to just take someone down with logic rather than be considerate of how they feel while still breaking it down.
I find that the later kind of the original series Spock was a little more logic, a little colder. A little more detached is how I'd look at it. Like he would do things. His actions said caring, but everything out of his mouth was just kind of like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah,
that is illogical.
You are tending a plant that is dead, Burnham.
You guys are siblings, not by blood.
Yeah,
see, so unnecessary to you. What a dick.
Yeah, that is a different Spock, but fun to watch. I have to admit.
Okay, so let's try to run through this episode chronologically like we do.
I'll never make it.
Okay, so the beginning shot, just real quick, I want to say that beginning shot of Cornwall's shuttle going through the ship.
Upside down?
Yeah. I just can't get enough of these effect shots with this beautiful ship.
You know I love them. Like, that's so great. That sells it.
Yeah. And I'm watching it on a small screen, too, and I'm just blown away.
I watched this whole thing on my phone.
Okay. And you're still,
Why would you do that, though?
Out of necessity, right?
Because I was putting my kid to bed, and I also needed to watch it. So I laid in bed, and I watched it on my phone.
Deadbeat dad.
Okay. I guess that's a pretty good reason, actually. But, I mean, it's so beautiful. Do yourself a favor at some point. Go back and watch it on the largest television you can find.
Mm-hmm. Just saying. So Cornwall boards. Apparently she's in our corner. And Pike is like, hey, you shouldn't trust Section 31.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Like, she's like, I'm gonna administer this magic ball
light detector
test. That was just like,
that was silly.
Yeah, I was like, okay, sure.
The cerebral mapping tech.
This is the most state of the art, and damn it, he's not lying. He won't budge. I just like how matter of fact, like how indignant Spock gets about, like, I fucking told you I didn't kill anyone. Move on to the next question. We're done.
I just didn't think she was that compelling of an interrogator.
No, I mean,
but I mean, if you're doing a lie detector test, you're supposed to make it very like yes, no questions.
Yeah, pretty neutral.
She had like four of the same questions. Like it was kind of.
But that's
ridiculous.
What you're supposed to do on those. Like you ask the same question in different ways to see if you get different responses. Sure.
Clyde wanted Tom Cruise from A Few Good Men to throw. throw some
I would have been all right with that.
You can't handle the truth.
Some banging on the table.
Yeah.
Stop lying to me. Something like.
But then we get the reveal of these like. Deepfakes videos have obviously advanced quite a bit. You can just straight up show a dude like from all sorts of angles murdering people.
So. Well, you can kind of do that now. I mean, I don't know how they were like, the video says the footage. So,
but we looked at the underlying code.
Yeah.
Did you? Because apparently it's a fucking hologram. I don't know how well you even looked at the code.
Just a hologram.
Well, I don't know if y'all remember from the original series, but this is almost like a prequel to Court Martial, where Kirk is accused of the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's video footage of him doing something wrong.
Oh,
and then he has to go, and they're, like, gonna reprimand him, and he has to go in front of this big old council. But then Spock plays chess with the computer to figure out that the computer is faulty.
Oh, shit.
So I was like, damn!
And Spock plays chess in this episode, too.
I know.
Did he play three-dimensional chess with the computer in that episode? Who knows?
I think so.
Yeah. I bet he didn't, you know, smash the board, knock it over.
Oh, yeah. Emotional Spock. I'm down with it. It works.
You give in to your feelings too much. Damn it! Throwing everything.
Let me give in to mine.
Yeah, I get it.
I like how he was like, I didn't kill them. I just pinched them. That's all I did.
Our pinches don't kill, I hope.
Yeah. I didn't like that the first like 8 to 10 minutes here was just all restating everything we already know for Cornwall's benefit. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, Spock's here because of this. No, he didn't kill people. Okay, the Red Angel, we think it's somebody from the future. Okay, we know this.
Yeah, but I don't know. I thought that as far as like making this episode kind of its own isolated, like standalone, it could work very well as that as well.
Sure.
They brought us up to speed and it didn't feel too over the top or just hitting us over the head with it. In fact, the interaction with Stamets and Spock and Burnham where he's like just being a dork and playing around like testing all those things and talking to himself. He's like, can you guys please talk?
Yeah.
And then they start talking and he's like, never mind. I don't know. I liked how that was a good way to get them to talk to us, the audience.
Mike, maybe that's what I was picking up on. The slowness was, it was a lot of restating. Mm-hmm. And the whole kind of dialogue with trying to figure out if Spock did it or not, we're already in the loop that he didn't do it. So maybe that slowness was just like, all right, I'm ahead already. So let me know when you've caught up to where I'm at.
Yeah, like we know this already. Yeah,
there wasn't anything in it for me.
Yeah. Still, to be said, I didn't feel like there was any issue with the pacing there. It was just like I already know this, you know. I actually enjoyed those scenes, and I liked the way they were shot. I think, like you, I really like Jonathan Frakes' directing choices for the most part. And every time he directs, you know there's going to be some interesting action.
Yeah, and there was some stuff around kind of that stuff that I appreciated. Like kind of seeing the Aryan videos and starting to understand, because they didn't give us this relationship with Tilly and Owo and Kayla. Like they didn't just give it to us, right? We had to work for it a little bit and kind of say, well, what are we watching? What are we seeing here? And then seeing the dialogue and kind of figuring that out. Like there was some things that we got that was like, oh, it's interesting that I thought fed into the bigger narrative.
And there's just one scene between her and her, I guess, new husband. Mm-hmm. And I like that they didn't try and like do all these flashbacks of like all these different tidbits of her relationship. We just needed that one moment and they didn't have to bore us with a bunch of other stuff to get their point across of what all she lost and what her tether still is to her humanity. Which, speaking of which, people's tether to humanity is also the other like underlying theme that they just keep repeating for everyone.
Well, of course, because now we're battling a sentient AI, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. We got introduced to Control here, which is a network computer that gives the Federation or the Starfleet all of their orders, apparently. And it's corrupted. We we got reintroduced to Admiral Pitar, a Logic extremist.
Rest in peace.
R.I.P., yeah.
Who or was, pieces.
Who wasn't an extremist?
Sorry.
Or maybe she wasn't. No, because we find out another hologram.
Yeah, she actually okay. might have been real cool. We won't know because she's been dead for a couple weeks.
Photons be free.
But sorry. Then that was her, or was that a hologram in the previous episode who was talking to Georgiou and being like, right. like, hey, no, I want more ideas from her.
Yeah.
Like, was that just more of a hologram, or was she alive in that scene?
I think they were all alive, and then when they beamed over to their base in this episode, we'd seen them massacred. They were dead for 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. I think those were the written. They
Sometimes
set it
it's
up
a little
to
sketchy
be real.
To figure out, like, what the timeline is and yeah, how many days or hours are passing between episodes.
Yeah. So what do you guys think that we're battling an AI here? We're battling Skynet. I was a little disappointed by that.
It's the Matrix, yeah, or yeah. Skynet.
Yeah.
Well, I think what I was a little disappointed in is toward the end, like, we didn't even really start to pull that thread, mm-hmm. right? Like, we got a little bit of Arium downloading some of the information, but it's kind of like that was it. Like, it ended without any real addressing of kind of what's going to happen. So I'm hoping that we'll get a little bit more of that on the next episode, but I doubt it.
I think the threat's already there that, you know, the Red Angel's coming to warn everybody about the destruction of the galaxy, and apparently it's at the hands of this AI, which is trying to learn how to become sentient.
Yeah, but is that over now?
I don't know.
Arium is figured out. Arium's dead, right? Like blown up in space.
But maybe she knows that there's something on this, like this place they have to find, or right. else it's still going to happen.
That's right. Yeah, because she didn't finish her upload to Control.
Right.
So yeah,
and she seemed very adamant that Control was going to find a way to do it.
Mm-hmm. But all that information that Control wants is still on the Discovery. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be after the Discovery.
And we've got to figure out what Project Daedalus is.
Okay, why
it's
was
a real thing?
Okay, why was this called Project Daedalus when it has nothing to do with that until the last like two words of the episode?
So I'm gonna not do any of this correctly.
Bring it.
Probably. Oh, I think I pulled up the wiki page. Anyway, it was a British science thing.
So it's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
And there's been several, I guess, cinema ships named Daedalus.
So it was an interplanetary society, They designed a plausible unmanned interstellar spacecraft intended as a scientific probe. They essentially wanted to have something that would be able to reach a destination within a human lifetime, and they were trying to figure out how to propel it properly to be able to do that.
Hmm. That's a terrible name for that. Doesn't Daedalus, isn't he the one who flies too close to the sun? No, that's his son, isn't it?
That's Icarus.
It's mm-hmm. Icarus, but Daedalus is his father.
I feel like every ship in like cinematic history that's named Daedalus mm-hmm. turns into like some type of a horror movie.
Yeah. Well, Daedalus killed Icarus's friend. That's what happens. Unless I'm getting my Greek myths like mixed up.
So I just read this book series, this sci-fi series. It's the Three Body Problem, but I think in the third book
I'm listening
of the series,
to it on yeah,
yeah, it's pretty fun. It's like some good hard sci-fi, and there's this one element of the story where they're trying to ship a person across space as fast as they can, and the only way they could figure out to do it. And keep the weight light enough in the ship in order to like propel it at an appropriate speed was to send only the person's brain. Like if we could just send that, so they basically got a person to volunteer to give their life and just freeze their brain and just send that across space.
What is the series called?
The Three Body Problem is the first book in the series. I don't remember what the series itself is called,
mm-hmm.
but it's by this Chinese author, and it's like a Hugo and Nebula award winning book. It's really great. If you guys are really into sci-fi, obviously you're listening to Star Trek podcast. just go ahead and read this.
If you guys like sci-fi. Science fiction is what it is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you might like this book.
Yeah. And anyway, that sort of made me think a little bit about I don't really know fully what goes on with Pike, but doesn't he just end up as a brain or as a head or something at some point?
He still has
a body.
He has a body, but he's incapacitated.
Oh, for some reason I thought he was like a head in a jar like in Futurama. I thought they were doing some play off of that.
No, I thought that too for a while, but then I went back and watched those episodes.
Okay, yeah. Then never mind. I just wasted your time, listeners. No, but with a good book recommendation.
Yeah.
And I remember where I know Daedalus from. It's a ship. It's a class of
Stargate.
Ship. Stargate.
Stargate. And it gets blown up.
Several times, yes.
Yeah, is totally. This a crossover event?
God, I hope not. That's too much for my brain to hold. So
we get to the base with all of the crazy drones.
The drones. That was fun. We had to go through this minefield without our shields. That was pretty cool.
But then we quickly had to turn them back on.
Did they turn them back on?
Yeah, because then the crazy razor thing started. He's like, it's going to cut through the ship like cheese.
Well, it seemed like that
which was just a really funny like line to me.
that sequence went on forever, and there was like 1,000 of those mines that cut through the ship, and then the ship's fine.
I know. Those things look like they'd be really helpful in like, I don't know, the original series or the next generation. I mean, hell, Deep Space Nine could have used a couple of those.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know where the technology went later, but they
could have used some of those in the Dominion War.
I'm just saying a couple, like one or two in the Dominion War would have been
Pike's
nice.
Whole thing, though, is like this technology is not within our protocol and should not exist. Yes. So I feel like that's the line they're giving you of why that doesn't exist.
Yeah, which goes back to the point where Cornwall is like, you embody everything the Federation should be. So he's already like, in a few episodes ago, he was. When they were retrofitting the Enterprise, he's like, hey, get rid of those holograms. I like the view screens. Mm-hmm. Get rid of all this tech. So it makes sense they're kind of correcting canon through Pike.
Does it feel weird to you guys that they're hyping up Pike as the epitome of the values of the Federation and Trek, I guess, when most people would ascribe that more toward maybe Kirk or later Picard?
Not really.
But he's like the mentor for Kirk. So yeah. It's like he's got to learn it from somebody.
He's Spock's mentor as well.
But
and
is Kirk, does Kirk really embody that, or is he just a little bit too much of like a wild renegade Lothario?
I mean,
Pike embodies it more with this version.
Yeah.
Of does. Yeah.
And I was I think the J.J. Abrams Kirk is a little bit more like Wild West renegade-y.
Okay.
Shatner's a loose cannon, not just on the show.
But even
that's just Shatner.
All iterations of Star Trek except for Enterprise, which takes place before this series.
Stop mentioning that word.
Getting from there here.
The theme song.
The problem I have with the theme song is it's too damn long.
It's so long.
It's pretty long.
It's
and
long.
It's country pop.
And it's almost as bad as the L Word theme song. Sorry.
Anyway, Pike is lauded through all of Trek. People have like the Christopher Pike, you know, medal, you know, like.
Oh, so the reverence here.
The
is
reverence
well
makes
placed.
It okay. makes sense. It's well placed for sure.
Then I'm okay with it. I buy it. It was a cute moment. I like how they prop him up, especially since the guy's been kind of beating himself up that he didn't get to play war, I guess, with everyone else.
He wasn't
I'm
in
a
war.
Scientist who's bummed I didn't get to play war.
Yep.
But sure, okay.
One thing that doesn't continue that Pike does here is cursing in Star Trek. He's like, we're going into a shitstorm.
He does say that.
Yeah, it always throws me off when I hear cursing in Star Trek. I like it. I enjoy it. But I'm always like, what? What's happening?
Welcome to CBS All Access.
Right.
These are bad boys.
Yeah.
They don't play by the rules.
You pay for curse words.
I loved his quote, though, giving up our values in the name of security is to lose the battle in advance. That is so Star Trek. I love that.
I just kind of struggle with why is Pike lecturing an admiral on the very fiber of the Federation?
Well, because that very fiber is not established throughout the entire Federation yet.
Yeah.
Right. She's now more war driven than he is a true scientist. Mm-hmm.
She operates in a bit of the gray area, especially as she's dealing with Section 31, it seems. Mm-hmm. And
right.
And yeah, they haven't embraced Pikeism.
I mean, in truth, I got to remember that she was captured by the Klingons and tortured for a while, so she might be a little bit
better. She's got some revenge to.
She too needs therapy. A little counseling might help her.
Yes.
Let's get Spock in the room with her, and we'll just get this all worked out.
She's still kind of yelled at. She thinks he's lying. So
yeah, they were in the room. Didn't work out for either one of them.
So, do we like Burnham's interaction with Spock here? I like that he's like. She's talking about how she expresses herself through her work and not through her living quarters. That's why it's so blank, and he's like,
I'm Mariah, whatever.
There are some points in there where I was like, this is correct sibling bullshit, you know, where I was like, yes, sure, this is correct. But then some of the lines back and forth, I could like, I think they're still figuring out how they talk to each other, and I can't tell if they're trying to do the like, oh, we both were brought up as Vulcans, and so everything we say is very precise and very literal versus like just getting into it like siblings would do. I don't know. It felt a little complicated.
I'm with you.
They're using the Vulcan like dictation style,
right?
As that, as it's, oh, this is just sibling rivalry.
But I also think that part of it is for our benefit, right? Like, I think if they were just talking to each other, they would leave out some of this extra dialogue. Right. But because it's really for our benefit, mm-hmm, they're giving a lot of background. And so I'm like, okay, so you probably wouldn't talk to your brother or sister that way.
Right.
But I'm in the room, so you're explaining it to me.
Yeah, it's a way to get the exposition across, mm-hmm, which I understand. But it got better through the episode. It was just the very beginning of their little squabble they were having. I was like, all right, guys.
Though I did enjoy their squabbling. I mean, I thought it was, you know, fun.
I liked the chess game.
Yeah. It was a little frustrating, though, to see Burnham lose, I guess, in a way, like, to him, like, to fall more victim to her humanness, I guess, in a way, and just get to be like, you know what, fuck you, and, like, start walking down the room. I was just like, ah, man, because he was just being a little bit of a stubborn dick, and I wanted her to basically break him down a little bit, and
I think there was.
I think she's not ready because she feels like it's, you know, like he said, everything is her fault.
Right.
And so she's still living in that place.
Yeah. But, and to his point, I think she can get over some of that stuff. I think ultimately they keep painting her as this kind of damaged, broken, scarred person. But every time they unveil like what she's scarred about, it's really not that deep. And a good therapist will help her. Like,
she started she was part of a war starting that was kind of a big deal.
And her parents got slaughtered by Klingons.
Yes. So I'm not.
It's like, there's some pretty decent deep wounds.
But what a Joe. She lost Georgia. Yeah.
And last episode, she got chased by this giant CGI crab monster that almost killed her.
She fell
when
in
she was
love
a
with a guy, and he turned out to be like
a Klingon.
A Klingon.
They didn't let her have her natural hair when she was a kid.
Okay, look. The Klingon thing, you're right. I mean, there's some things.
She's got a baggage.
Okay, I got to back this up a little bit. But yeah, there are some things today. But I'm thinking like, okay, yes, she was in the other room when the Klingons killed her parents. But it's not her fault, and a good therapist would help her come to terms with that.
Right. Well, I think his point of you need to unburden yourself because none of this is your fault. And you
He said, you avoid reality because it's easier for you to shoulder burden than to face unimaginable grief.
Thank you. Yes. She's, mm-hmm, she's just not dealing with her shit.
But I'm just trying to figure out, like, why hasn't anyone helped her with this until this point?
Well, I think because she's masked it with her work. You know, she's...
Well, I'm talking about when she was, like, a kid. Like, you got...
But she's in a place that doesn't have emotion.
She was in Vulcan. They don't...
What about the mom? The mom was a human.
She's a human that decided, oh, I'll marry a person who's emotionally distant. What can we kind of read into her?
Fair point. Fair point.
I did like that Spock. What he told her is true, and if it was coming from a warmer place, that might help her. But he was just like, get over your shit because in all those situations, you were irrelevant.
I don't know. I wonder if him just being straightforward and telling her that is something that she might have needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And it comes from someone who she does have a deep relationship with and who can kind of pinpoint like the pain points of her past and just like say.
But then she had to watch like killing her friend on this mission. So it's just like one after another for this poor gal.
Yeah.
I did. I mean, it was kind of obvious, but I like the reversal that happened when she's trying to – when they're playing chess and he – goes another way and does something that she doesn't expect, and she's like, oh, we should do that here. I like how that played out on the bridge with Pike just yelling at the crew members' names, like, throw me a new course. You know, that was great, over and over.
Mm-hmm. I kept I didn't mean to cut you off on that, but I kept expecting when they were playing chess, and right as she was about to storm out of the room, she does this turn to him that I thought was aha, gotcha. I was using my emotions to get you to reveal a bit of yourself, Spock. But no, it wasn't. I thought it was like that Black Widow in Avengers moment where she's playing Loki. Mm-hmm. I thought it was something like that. Oh, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, uh-huh. But no. She was genuinely upset and he got to her.
But it came back around when she realized, oh, what we need to do is just...
Not be logical.
Yes, not be logical. Embrace the chaos. So I guess there was a thread through that.
Also, during this scene when they're dealing with the drones, the whole time they're like, guys, fix the spore drive.
Right.
We're going back to that.
It's always broken.
It is always broken.
Just got to hit those mushrooms with a wrench or something.
It's kind of like we're not committing to saying we're not going to use it.
Right.
But what we'll do is we'll just never be able to use it.
I guess. Mm-hmm. That's frustrating.
Here's what else is frustrating.
It gives Stamets something to do.
Where's Tig Notaro?
Yeah. You know, she could fix that shit with some Band-Aids.
She said that, like, the actor said that she was going to be a lot in this season. She was in, like, one episode. Two?
Two. I think two, yeah.
Shenanigans, and I want her fixing stuff.
Yeah.
Fix stuff and fix people. That's what this shit means.
There are, like, 1,000 characters on this show, and the one that I think we should see a lot more of is nowhere to be seen.
Well, they spared us Ash this time, whiny Ash.
This is true. Mm-hmm. You can't have all these characters in a show.
Although I thought it was interesting that Burnham is obviously kind of moving past her anger towards him because she's like defending, like, I don't think he would do that. Mm-hmm. I think he is loyal to the Federation. I don't think he's as loyal to these crazy people as you think he is.
And she's very loyal to the people she cares about. Mm-hmm. I mean, she did all this for Spock and now she's trying to help Ash. And she told Pike, you'll see. I'll make you believe in Ash.
And I mean, she was right, because it was Arium who was sending the messages. Right. So.
Poor Ash. Everyone, including the people in this room, have been giving him a hard time. And he's just got a heart of gold. You know?
I'm looking forward to the character being redeemed.
Okay.
So do you think at some point on the bridge, it kind of seemed like Arium realized that she... It's like she's realized that she's messed up.
Yeah, I really like cry for help. She's like, please stick with me, Tilly.
And then Tilly like bounced. Like great that, friend.
That made everything so much like worse. You know, watching this character realize that she is being corrupted and doesn't know how to stop it.
But I think it helped us, right? Because it helped us not vilify Arium,
right?
Because I think at first I was like, all right, because when we first started this episode and having seen the preview, I was really in a state of, all right, get rid of her.
Oh,
right?
She's a monster. Yeah.
She's a monster. She's a robot. I'm not really attached to her. I had zero connection to her going into this episode and a ton by the time we got about halfway through. And then a lot of respect toward the end. So I thought bringing us on that journey in such a short amount of time was really well done.
Yeah. I felt sympathy for her. Definitely. Yeah.
Can I complain about something real quick?
Please.
Do it.
All right. Let's go back to Cornwall. Mm-hmm. So she's like, hey, I feel like this Admiral Patel, is that the name? I think, is a bit of a zealot over at Section 31. We need to sneak over there and we need to take her down. And they're like, okay, if you say so. And then she proceeds to give them like no information on how to do it, really. She's like, oh yeah, while we're warping over there, I guess I can give you a quick rundown of this impenetrable fortress, this like CIA headquarters where we need you to steal a knock list, but we don't have any plan. We don't have any plan to do this.
She kind of draws a little line in the map, like go there.
I mean,
I guess, man, she like screwed them over and all of a sudden they're getting like...
Classic Cornwall.
This was a cheese cut.
Terrible plan.
Like, cheese grater.
One of the worst Star Trek plans maybe ever.
I like that we had a plan, though. It was like, let's go here, let's do this, this together.
Plan.
We had an idea. We had a destination.
Because a plan is kind of strong. This was people with some dirt and a stick going, all right, so we're going to go through this way. Then we're going to cut over this way. You hold the flashlight. Like, this was a bad idea from jump.
Was not good.
Yeah.
But it's their only choice. They're on the run. The whole Federation is after them.
They could have took 3 more minutes to say, hey, why don't we all put our heads together and think about something?
Like, what do you know about this place? Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot to mention there's mines all over the place and that you can't have a warp drive. I'll let you know, or you can't have your shields up.
Yeah.
I'll let you know as soon as we're in that situation rather than planning ahead. That's some bullshit from a tactical admiral who got that rank as they should know how to plan that shit. And she just came from war. She just came from war where they had to actually think of strategical whatever the fuck.
Very true.
Strategical fuckery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cornwall is bad at
a lot of stuff.
Strategical fuckery.
She's bad at a lot of stuff, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, she's also the character who so obviously did not see that the Klingons were going to take her. Like, go to that meeting.
Yeah, I mean,
everything's going to be fine. And it's like, oh, no, it's
I think
not.
What you're saying is she got captured and you don't like people who get captured.
Whoa, whoa,
whoa.
No.
That's what you're saying, right?
Don't say that.
I'm just saying
you don't like people who get
she
captured.
She didn't see the trap.
Okay.
She also slept with Lorca, or...
No.
Yes, she did. Oh, she slept with Bad Lorca.
With Mira Lorca and didn't even realize
and didn't
he was
even
Mira
recognize
Lorca.
It.
She was like, you seem a little different from me, but... Can we bone again?
I mean, so yeah.
When you're in space, what happens in space stays in space.
Stays in space. Space is
people
like
in
Las
space
Vegas.
Got needs, I guess.
We all got needs, my friend.
Well, speaking of lovers in space, Stamets needs some love. Poor guy.
Yeah, it does feel like there's so much else going on that we don't get enough time as the audience to properly focus on how traumatic it is for him. Like we're definitely exploring all the pain that's going on with Culber, even in the few scenes that we get. Like he just is a man who doesn't know who he is. He's in this like imposter body and he feels like a fake, whatever. But from Stamets' perspective, man, that guy is going through a roller coaster of like ups and downs too, and that's just tragic.
Are we going to get time to fully explore that? Because
I
we only have
so.
Two more episodes.
I don't know.
Yeah, two more episodes, and we're building up Pike, and we got to get to where maybe he shuffled off the ship.
I think we got it. I think we got it in this episode, in the one line that Spock gave Stamets. I think it's over. Give him space. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not because of you. It's because he's trying to figure out who he is. In, done. Don't talk about this anymore.
It's like, hey, audience, here's what's going on. You're not going to get any more.
Shouldn't
of this,
that be a conversation between Culber and Stamets?
It should be, but with two episodes left, a lot of going on. I don't know that we're going to get it.
We don't have time for that.
Spock's such a dick. Man, he's just like,
he's great.
I too have been in had someone who I truly loved just close himself off for me. And you know what I did? I said, fuck emotion to the whole world. That's what you should do too. Just give up on all of it.
Don't feel anything. Oh, and you can't navigate a thing you've jumped through multiple times.
Oh,
believe
yeah.
it yourself.
I actually wrote that down like, that's inspiring. Like, wait, no, it's kind of dickish,
it's
actually.
It's really condescending.
Yeah, it's pretty condescending.
He was just tossing out wisdom nuggets.
Yeah.
Covered in shit.
So I thought that with Pike, with Cornwall, obviously, like, talking to Patel, and Patel was like, all y'all are messed up, and you guys are all traitors, and go turn yourself in. I like that Pike was like, no, I got your back. And then everyone else is like, hell yeah, we got your back. And they're like, everyone is just on board with Pike and his loyalty to what's right, not to what's lawful.
Everyone's drank the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, we saw that big time last episode, last week. Yeah, everybody was just like, nope, we're going to be fugitives. We're in this together. And it was reiterated again this week. And it was great how the entire crew was working together to get through that minefield. I love seeing that. Don't you love seeing that? You like the scenes of the bridge crew together.
I loved it.
Like your thing.
I wish we knew more about these random people on the bridge crew.
We will.
Like, I think,
Felix
like,
coming.
Yeah, there was a guy who, I guess, Arium was sparring with. We see him in the background of, like, every scene.
He's dropping lines all the time.
Yeah.
And once again,
he talked.
Watch The Office, watch Park and Rec, and watch how many seasons you get until you start fleshing out those background characters.
Just saying.
They go seasons, and this is just season two.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, we don't know who...
I know, I did say
Creed is.
All of the bridge and the augmented folks get their lines this episode.
You know, it's funny because I was ready to have this conversation and I was going to count Kayla's lines. And so her first two lines were, yes, Captain. And I was like, I'm the over-under is going to be at 6. And then she had this moment where she had like two sentences in a row. And I was like, oh, well, I'm going to stop counting now.
I like that we see these really casual, you know, human moments between all these people. You don't typically see that in Star Trek. Also, we haven't talked about Tilly. I think She, I thought we were going to get overboard Tilly again. We almost got there, but she was pretty fun.
That's because Pike keeps her in check. Like, yeah. Every time she says something, he's like, just get to the main
get
point.
Get to it.
Yeah.
I think Tilly has too much fun when they have like turbulent scenes because she goes like full headbang in the background.
You just see the big old
like,
red.
The big ponytail just goes flying. And I was like, she is having a ball. Like,
she does seem like she's having fun though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We get that one other line that she says a little bit earlier on to Ariam, I want to say, where she says something about her mom issues. And I'm like, ah, oh, poor Tilly. Once
she's
again,
like, oh, if
she
I could really have has memories, not... I'd forget my mom.
Right.
Right.
That's like a heavy thing for her to kind of admit. And I'm like, she really needs to address that.
I like that we also got to see a lot more of those, like, the personal touches in people's rooms to kind of help, I think, you know, emphasize the fact that Burnham does not have anything in her room. You know, there's like even Ariam has like the thing of sand and the picture of her and her husband. And yeah, so we get to see like all of those sort of smaller pieces that make you like attach to the characters more.
Everyone else has personal effects and Burnham still doesn't. Like they even show that Ariam the robot has more like personal effects in her room.
Yeah.
You know, at some point, Burnham's just going to get it together. She's going to go to, you know, Space IKEA and get some stuff. Because the truth is...
Because, like, Sara's room is amazing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's got greenery.
He's got plenty of succulents around the room. He's got cactuses. He's got everything.
He could open up an Austin restaurant tomorrow.
He really could. But I think what's so interesting is that when you look at Burnham's room, it's blank, right? Because she's like, well, I'm a Vulcan. And I'm thinking, you're a Vulcan who has an emotional breakdown every 15 to 20 minutes. So I'm not really buying it. Get yourself a potted plant and a picture, you know, of Ryan Gosling or something. So,
or at least a Pike.
Or something.
He walks in the room, weird decoration.
Put up a little picture of, like, you know, Sarek or something. Like, something.
Some Alice in Wonderland paraphernalia.
Yeah.
Ash.
Now that's in my head, Grant.
Now you guys aren't.
Now it's in my head.
Let's see what June looks like
sleep tonight.
Oh man, the Ash Tiger Beat magazine is so good. Love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so
Men of Discovery.
Let's talk about their little like away mission. Like Burnham's assigned like. You got to, like, Saru, for some reason, is like, I delegate. I want to stay on here and do some nerdery.
Oh, because
he's figuring out the heat map thing.
The holograms.
And yeah. And so Burnham's like, I'm going to assemble a team of badass women. We're going to go, I guess we're just going to fly easily over onto this super fortress.
Well, they beamed in there, didn't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just going to go on here, and we're just going to go ahead and capture someone. Big whoop on maximum security Section 31 fortress, but...
I'm just happy that
I had a point, but then I got worked up about that.
I'm just happy that at least the individuals on the away team seem to make sense, mm-hmm. right? You've got the chief of security.
Mm-hmm.
You have the person who's going to be able to program, you know, or reprogram
the R2-D2, yeah,
right. And then you got Burnham, who you know just probably should go on the missions. And you don't have Pike, right? I'm like, the last thing you need is the captain of your ship hanging around. You know, some murderous infested,
ex-jail.
Basically.
Yeah. Well, their exosuits were badass.
And the mag boots.
Yeah. It looks like Avengers Endgame. Remember when they're walking in their new whites? Have you guys seen the trailer?
Oh, the new trailer. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. It did look like that.
It looks like the new suits. It looks really cool. You look at Nan, and she's got red sleeves. And I was going... Aw, shit, she's going to die.
I know, because they really preface that with that line of like, oh, that stuff in your face is all that you need to breathe, right?
Turn to the camera. You guys caught that, right?
Chekhov's headgear.
Yeah. And then, of course, it wasn't her. She lives another day.
Though I'm not quite sure how, because she looked like she was dead there for a second.
Yeah.
Pretty hard.
She's a pretty good security chief.
We saw her grab the thing, right? She's
alive.
She had it in her hand, but she like passed out.
Yeah, she was done.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it's like, I'm getting it back in. I'm like, how did you wake up?
Well, I guess she probably, like, logically in my mind, it would be like she got it on, but like you need some time to like get some oxygen or whatever she needs to get back in her
system. I thought she was going to need some help. I thought she was going to need some help. I thought like Burnham was going to be like, here, take it.
I also don't know why they just didn't beam. If you can beam onto the ship, why didn't they beam the girl who needs something to breathe back onto the ship?
Stakes.
Great question.
Because of stakes.
Okay, let's talk about that bite sequence.
I liked it.
Oh, good.
Good wire work. Pretty cool. Without Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah, when Arian punches her across the room and then does that jump up in the air where she's doing hover hands.
That's
like,
the Matrix jump.
It was a Morpheus jump, right?
It was a silly fight, but there was some stuff in it that was really impressive.
I thought a lot of the hand, like the fight choreography was really good. The hand-to-hand combat was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Frake specializes in pretty cool action scenes. So this was pretty good.
Yeah. You could feel all the punches that Burnham was taking and that she was not able to deliver back. Like, she's able to use her skill to kind of take down Arium and like make her lose her balance. But she wasn't like landing any punches that were doing any damage to that cyborg frame or whatever's going on with her.
It was pretty good. I mean, one thing this show gets right for all the criticisms people have of it is the art direction, the action, the cinematography. The thing looks great. The thing is choreographed great. And when there's a purpose for an action scene like this, you're not going to be disappointed.
Nope.
That's like three or four things that gets great. It's awesome.
It gets a lot of
I know
of
you like the show, Grant. We're happy you like the show.
I'll complain about something again. I think you want me to talk about Cornwall?
I think you'll like Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, even more.
Oh, great. That makes me think I won't like it.
Yeah. What else you got, Grant? You got your phone up there.
Oh. Here's another idea I had.
Okay.
When they were talking about, like, how can we possibly stop Arium? I was like, why don't you just shoot everything you have on the ship and just kill all of them?
No.
Like, they certainly didn't think about that. That wasn't even a consideration. I was like, that was the first thing. I was like, if it's the fate of the galaxy, kill
the I think if she started the upload, they would have destroyed it.
But why kill three when all you have to do is kill one?
Yeah.
Again, also, why didn't they just beam her off the ship?
I'm with you.
As soon as they knew she was, like, not okay, like, beam her right to the brig.
I get they can just locate them wherever they are then.
I mean, they're wearing a locator device on their chest.
Maybe she turned it
Wasn't
off.
Wasn't there a throwaway line that the AI was messing with the ship and they couldn't get to the...
With the navigation, though, but not... Mm-hmm. If they could beam on... And
I thought the navigation was being disrupted by some of those mines. Yeah.
Now, did Burnham actually pull the ejector? It looked like she didn't because Arium was still talking when she got sucked out.
She didn't. It was Nahn. Nahn pulled it.
Oh, is that who did it?
Mm-hmm. Good. Guilt-free. Guilt-free for Burnham.
I thought maybe... I was thinking maybe Tilly did it remotely.
Are you sure it was Nahn?
Yeah.
It wasn't Burnham?
It was not Burnham. Burnham was talking, and then it happens, and she looks, and Nahn has her hand on the thing.
Oh, okay.
And is like...
And her finger on her mouth going,
my bad.
It's like, I'm doing my job.
You know, we haven't talked about the line, right? That when Arium says, not only find out about Project Daedalus, but it's all about you, Michael. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel like this feeds into our Red Angel theory that is definitely Michael.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I guess one thing that's starting to bug me because it seems so obvious as Spock's like, why me? What is so unique about me? And I just want to go, your relationship with Burnham, moron.
Hmm. It's not that he's a human Vulcan
I'm
hybrid.
Sure that's part of it, but he's technically, I mean, if you really think about it, it's not just that. Like, it's not just
him. Could be a red herring. I don't know.
I think it's clearly, I mean, and I think we've been on
it's
the idea
that it's someone we know.
It's Amanda.
Yeah.
Ooh,
no.
It just came to me.
No, but I think this whole thing is about Burnham and him and their relationship, and that's why they're having all this struggle.
Right.
I mean, it could be, it's probably Burnham, right?
And then Spock just loves time travel. So it's like, of course it's going to be Spock with anything to do with time travel. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. If it's Burnham, there has to be another mystery to it. There has to be another layer.
We have three instances of the Red Angel showing up. One is to save her life, basically, by coming as a vision to Spock. Mm-hmm. One was popping up at the end once again to kind of save Burnham when the planet's exploding, that first one with Tignataro.
Burnham doesn't seem like the type of character who would travel time to save herself. Though.
Unless she knows that she herself needs to keep saving everyone else. So right. She needs to be there to be that, become Red Angel.
That motivation does make sense.
Maybe it's kind of like Terminator, where it's not Burnham, but it's maybe one of Burnham's like descendants.
Don't say it's like Terminator, dude. Sorry. That mythology so fucked
I'll
up.
I'll be back.
I like Terminator, but come on.
But
I don't remember what the third one was. What was the third instance where she? She pops up on the planet for all those people to see right before that she disappears. The weird.
Well, there's another one. There's two planets. There's the people who they abduct. I don't want to say
New
abduct.
Eden or whatever.
New Eden. New Eden. Mm-hmm. And then there's a
so that's
Saru's
four.
Planet. Saru's planet. Yep.
That's four instances. Okay, so wait, Pike said three because maybe he doesn't know about the childhood. Oh, I don't know. They said three.
Well, there's three, like, in that the past 6 months.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the New Eden one was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Did the Red Angel show back up at...
There's just a signal. I don't think they actually saw a Red Angel there.
Signal. Well, we might find out next week, huh?
In the episode titled Red Angel.
Yeah.
Probably.
One would think. I mean, don't you feel like they're setting it up for the cliffhanger that, like, Burnham's going to get, like... sent into the future or something, and we gotta wait to find out what happens to her.
Yeah. Oh, for like all of the next season, it's gonna be Burnham lost for Burnham.
In space.
Or like the first like two or three episodes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be cool. Maybe she zaps forward in time and ends up on the Picard show for an episode or two.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I wouldn't put it past him.
That's how they tie in everything.
The Red Angel's Picard.
Well, maybe at some point she turns into a cartoon.
There's also right before, so after I finished watching this episode, my partner pulled up, who's also a big Trekkie, an episode of the animated series where Spock has to go back in time and save his childhood self from a giant monster in the desert.
Okay. So Spock's a Red Angel.
To like stay in the correct version of the timeline. I was like, I was like writing notes while the episode was on, but then I was like, wait a second, what is going on? Like,
interesting. So this is a theme we've seen before in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the Control AI is part of the canon in the Star Trek novels.
Oh.
But it's never been referenced
in
the...
Isn't Control the evil society in Get Smart?
Yes.
Okay, just checking.
That's all I was thinking.
It's every time you say Control, I just keep thinking...
I just picture the cone of silence.
Yeah, I just keep thinking, come on, 99.
Exactly, yeah. All right. Well, we kind of love this episode. It gave us a lot to talk about. I think next week's episode will do the same. I think we're in a good streak here. This is for me, this is the best the show's ever been.
I think we're going to miss
a few episodes.
I think we're going to miss Arium.
Yeah. And yeah, we just got to know her. My new favorite character, Arium.
You mean your new second favorite character after Kayla?
After Spike. Spike the vampire. All right, guys, thanks for listening. Visit us at StarTrekPod.com. You want to help us out? Visit us at Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Grant, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Twitter.
What's your name on Twitter?
I'm just look for me
at Baron Von Grant.
Yeah, I think you've mentioned it every other episode. So
yeah, Mariah.
I'm at Mariah Gossett. It's Mariah with a Y, two R's. Gossett with two S's and two T's.
And Clyde.
You can find me on Twitter at Clyde Haynes, and you can find me kind of on the web at keyandclyde.com.
And visit our podcast network, Electric Sweater.
Electric Sweater!
Sweater. I always forget you guys are going to do that. I just keep talking. ElectricSweater.com. You can find a bunch of more TV podcasts there. And live long and prosper.